This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
Does it hurt a lot?
No.
You're a tough lady, huh?
Yep, I am.
I bet you are.
Tough New Englander.
That's right. Okay, we'll get you cleaned up.
The emergency room at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center.
So room 4 is a 59-year-old male, well-known to the eye. Initially got 5 and 2 for some agitation.
Some days are calmer than others. Patients are seen on time, doctors aren't overwhelmed, nurses are able to give the compassionate one-on-one care expected of their profession.
That's kind of his typical presentation, and everyone, I think, assumed that it was from alcohol since he has a history of alcohol abuse. And he's had a couple of recent ED visits in the last couple of weeks with the same presentation. Gets 5 and 2, feels better, goes home.
But recent studies show that a day like this is anything but typical. And in many hospitals around the state, before their shift ends, a nurse is probably going to be attacked, most likely by a patient. In fact, a June 2008 study showed that healthcare workers are 16 times more likely to be confronted with violence on the job than any other service profession.
Room 5 is a 59-year-old female, history as well of gastroparesis, coming in with 5 years of abdominal pain.
And nurses say the problem is getting worse. So earlier this month, Governor Deval Patrick signed a bill into law that stiffens penalties for those who assault nurses and other healthcare workers. People now face 2.5 years in jail and up to a $5,000 fine for attacking hospital staff. But some nurses say even that isn't enough. The penalties don't do much to stop attacks before they happen. And they're calling on hospitals to do more to make what are supposed to be havens of caring and compassion safe from violence and danger. So, listeners, have you ever seen violence in the emergency room or any other part of a hospital? Or maybe you've been restrained as a result of a crisis yourself. Are you a nurse who fears violence in the workplace? And I guess maybe the bigger question is, in a world where hospital wait times seem to be forever and other social services are being cut, is the atmosphere in a hospital just bound to be more tense, more agitated, and more dangerous than ever before? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also, as always, comment online at wbur.org/Boston. Well, joining me now to talk a little bit more about this new legislation and the reality of their workplaces is Linda Condon. She's an emergency room nurse at Morton Hospital in Taunton and also a freelance nurse at Norton Hospital. Linda, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Also with us is Karen Coughlin. She's a nurse at Taunton State Hospital and vice president of the Massachusetts Nurses Association. Karen Coughlin, welcome to you.
Thank you.
So let me just start off by asking you, Governor Deval Patrick, he signed this legislation just at the beginning of this month, which it now includes nurses and all hospital or medical workers that attacks against them would be punishable by, as we said, up to 2.5 years in prison and $5,000 fine. That's been done. But why don't you, for people who maybe don't personally experience this every day, Karen, take us into the workplace. What have you yourself experienced?
Well, I myself have experienced numerous assaults. I've been working for 26 years as an RN in a psychiatric setting, and I've been hit, punched, scratched. I've had weapons pulled on me. I've been threatened with my life. Many scary situations.
I've read that even at one time your young son asked you, "Mom, did someone attack you today?"
He's a little bit older now. yes, when I came home from work one day, he was about 14 years old, and he actually asked me if anybody had tried to kill me that day. Not if anybody had attacked me, but if someone had tried to kill me that day. Because as a child in the household, he had heard me, you know, probably speaking to my husband on numerous occasions mm-hmm. about what had gone on at work.
Wow. And Linda Condon, I mean, I also understand that in 2007, the Emergency Nurses Association found that up to 50% of emergency nurses had been punched, at the very least, at least once in the prior 2 years, and 86% of them had reported some kind of physical violence against them in the workplace. Does that match your experience?
Actually, it's probably higher than that. Those are the reported ones. I mean, there are ones that, you know, it occurs and the nurse doesn't report it. The administrations don't document this. They don't follow this, which is part of the problem. So I'm sure that the assault level is even higher than that. A day doesn't go by that somebody doesn't get hit, kicked, punched, spit on, or verbally threatened, cornered in a room. It's widespread. mm-hmm. and it's very high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you feel that, I mean, is this situations that it's largely patients who already come in agitated that it just spills over into some other worse form of physical violence? Or what? Who's doing
here? You have that level. You have the patients that come in who are already agitated and verbally assaultive, and you know that they're going to escalate. But you also have the ones who come in very quietly, who after a period of time get tired of waiting, and then they become agitated. So you're also dealing with that. You have family members who come in, visitors. You have visitors who come in who get into arguments with the patients, family members who get in arguments with the patient, so that you have that whole issue to deal with, and then you walk into the middle of it, and then you become the target.
Mm-hmm. I mean, as Linda was saying, Karen, I mean, nurses, the irony here is you are on the front line. Nurses are the ones who most often and most frequently are seeing patients of most
Correct.
Hospital staff. So you're the one who's going to get the rawest and most honest emotional response from patients.
Correct, normally, because we bear the brunt of it because we're the direct care workers. We're right there on the front lines. So, you know, we are the ones who are facing, like, the escalation of violence across all healthcare settings. I mean, it's not just in emergency rooms or in psychiatric settings. I mean, you know, we're seeing it across all floors, med-surg, whatever. And I think a lot of it has to do with staffing resources. You know, you don't have the ability to spend time with your patients to be able to perform an assessment as to whether or not, get a family history. Is there a history of a violence? You know, what is the family there for now? What is the patient's history, mm-hmm. et cetera? You don't have the time to, you know, be able to go in and see what the situation is. You know, oftentimes you're just thrust into it. And they're in a crisis situation. You know, when someone is in the hospital for care, everyone's, you know, feelings are elevated. You know, they feel they're in crisis. You know, a lot of times it just has, there's a difficulty to cope.
You mentioned something actually interesting there. You said it's not just really in emergency rooms or with psychiatric
Absolutely
patients.
Not.
Well, you said in surgery as well?
Med-surg units,
the intensive care unit. When most patients come in, a lot of the admissions come directly through the emergency room. Very few patients are directly admitted to the hospital by the doctors.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that violent situation coming into the emergency room, and that violent situation moves upward. If the patient goes to the intensive care unit, it doesn't stop in the ER because they've been transferred to the ICU. It continues up into the ICU. You still have that patient, you still have the situation, you still have the family. We have patients who have come in who have been stabbed or shot. A lot of times we have the two assailants in the same department across the hall from one another, and we have all the people who come in with them. And then when one of them is admitted or transferred to another hospital, that violence goes to that other hospital or up to that floor.
I've got a lot of callers who want to join us on this, so let's get straight to them. Caroline's calling from Brighton. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, thanks. This has been, hi to the two nurses there. This has been a long time coming. I've been a registered nurse in various hospitals in Boston for 28 years, and I'm now doing home care. And I have to say that it happens in the hospital, and it happens in the home. I've been in patients' homes where there have been drug deals going down in the bathroom, families fighting with each other, very unsafe conditions where I'm constantly looking over my shoulder. You know, we go into bad neighborhoods. Sometimes the police will take you and, go and make sure that you're safe. They'll give you an escort. But sometimes they're too busy to do that. And if you're in a bad territory, and I don't want to name the areas because I don't want anyone to get mad, but if you're in a bad area and you need someone with you, you know, sometimes you just go, and it's really unnerving.
Caroline, can I just ask you briefly, I mean, do people ever tell you this is part of what it means to be in the nursing profession, that because you are on the front lines and you are the first and most frequent person that a lot of patients meet, whether at home or in the hospital, that you just have to deal with it?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, I think because we're a female-dominated field, I don't know if the other nurses, the two nurses there with you feel this way, but I think because we're a female-dominated field, if this was a field that had more men in nursing, which it's starting to, but I think if that was happening, then the abuse that's happened with nurses by patients and patients' families and doctors. I know I have a friend of mine who a doctor threw a scalpel at her in the OR and hit her. and she sued him. I mean, things go on with nurses. Nurses just take and take and take.
Caroline, thank you so much for your call. Karen Coughlin, I mean, what are the responses that nurses who you've spoken to, you are the vice president of the Massachusetts mm-hmm. Nurses Association, which I should say is 20,000 plus strong,
23,000.
A union in Massachusetts. What responses do nurses report getting from hospital administrators or fellow staff members when
I think the nurses that we've spoken to have become increasingly frustrated, and I think that's why they've become more active about this entire issue, because they're not receiving the support from their hospital administrators or their home health care agencies that they work for, et cetera. And they are demanding now, standing up and demanding that something be done to protect them in their healthcare setting, in their workplace, because this isn't what they signed up for. So I think, you know, we also have nurses who, you know, they do complain about the legal system. It takes so long for these things to be brought forth through the judicial system. They have come up upon clerks or judges who say, well, it's part of the job, or, you know, et cetera. So it's frustrating.
So, Linda, this new legislation, which now imposes penalties on people who have attacked mm-hmm. Nurses and other hospital workers, you consider it a victory, but is it enough?
No, that's one piece of it. The other major piece is the workplace violence legislation that we're looking at, which would require the administrations to do a physical and risk assessment in their facility. And every facility is different. Some facilities pose a higher risk than others. And it would require them to do a total assessment to secure the environment, to train everyone there how to deal with the violence, to keep documentation of it, to have meetings with the staff concerning it, and to support the staff in going forth. And the part with the workplace violence legislation is what we're looking to do is to reduce and prevent the violence from occurring in the first place.
We're going to get to that right after the break. Linda Condon and Karen Coughlin, please stand by. We are talking about violence in hospitals and nurses being attacked and what we can do to both prevent and punish that here in Massachusetts. There is new legislation that's just been signed by Governor Deval Patrick, but we'll also get the view from hospitals and some patient advocates as well. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. We'll be right back. This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about workplace violence in hospitals and what can and should be done to protect nurses from assaulting, to protect nurses from patients who assault them. We are joined by Linda Condon. She's emergency room nurse at Morton Hospital in Taunton, and also by Karen Coughlin. She's a nurse at Taunton State Hospital and the vice president of the Massachusetts Nurses Association. You can join us as well. Have you seen violence in emergency rooms? Have you been on the receiving end of violence if you're in the nursing profession, in hospitals? How can we better protect healthcare workers? And is having punitive laws the answer, or is there something else that hospitals themselves can be doing? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'd also like to just briefly into the conversation bring Nikki Glazer. She is a board member of the Massachusetts People Organized for Wellness, Empowerment, and Rights, or Empower. They're a mental health advocacy group. Nikki Glazer, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, thank you.
So let me just ask you briefly, I mean, Empower seems to have some concern with this new legislation that puts punitive effects on people who attack nurses. What's your concern with the legislation?
I mean, we're extremely concerned and frankly horrified with the legislation. And we were really sideswiped by it. As far as I can tell, almost everyone working on legislative issues in the disability world are just like flabbergasted. They can't believe this thing got passed and nobody even knew. So
there's no
input from the community.
What specifically is your concern? What could your fear the potential outcome could be?
I mean, basically what I think this legislation does is it puts the weight of a broken system, which I think Karen just said was staffing resources problem, and a lot of other problems like an antagonistic dynamic that happens when people are distressed and then they're faced in a powerless situation. It puts the weight of a broken system on the backs of people with mental health disabilities, and then criminalizes disability, rather than actually fixing the problem, which is actually pretty difficult and challenging, but can be fixed.
So if I understand correctly, your concern is that these are patients who already have some mental health issues, and they're going to be sent to prison, made criminals essentially for behavior that they can already not control?
Well, first of all, I mean, we represent people with mental health conditions, so I'll be speaking for that community, mm-hmm. and I can't really speak to the other situations going on in the emergency rooms. But, I mean, essentially what happens a lot of the time is that somebody is already in distress, and then you automatically you lose all kinds of rights once they say, you know, they ping paper you, or you're being forced to do this, forced to do that. And you're in an intensely powerless situation that I assure you would be very distressing to anyone. And when you're already in distress, for some people, they respond like, no, you're not going to do this to me. I'm not going to mm-hmm. take it, you know. So I think there's a lot of opportunity often to de-escalate those situations that often isn't done.
So is that where you'd like to see next steps being taken, that some other form of training perhaps for hospital staff?
Yeah, I mean, I think de-escalation training is definitely extremely important. I also think what's important is understanding the power dynamics that go on, especially with people with mental health conditions, where you kind of really lose a lot of your rights, and it's written into the way treatment is provided. I mean, the whole idea of, like, forced treatment, being behind locked doors, being vulnerable to be put in restraints and seclusion. I mean, I have a really distressing story of my own I could tell in emergency room. And the only reason it didn't turn violent is, I mean, I thank God I started praying, and I'm also not the kind of person that tends to react in a violent mm-hmm. way, but I can really understand how someone else in that situation might have.
So it seems that Empower believes that there are other ways to de-escalate situations that don't involve some kind of criminal punishment for patients. Nikki Glaser, board member for Wellness, Massachusetts People Organized
Empower,
Empower. Okay. Yeah. Wanted to give you the honor of the full name there of Empower, but Nikki Glaser, board member for Empower, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. Karen Coughlin, let me just get a brief response from you. You work at...
I work at a DMH facility, and I will say that I'm very proud of the work that, you know, our members in, you know, the DMH facilities do. We've made great strides in restraint reduction. It's very much, you know, we try to empower the patient. It's all about recovery and resiliency. That being said, I will say that as far as this law goes, I mean, we still have, in Massachusetts, we have laws, you know, related to criminal responsibility and competency to stand trial. And certainly if we have a mental health client who, you know, falls under the parameters of that, there still is, you know, within the law, the ability to see if they were criminally responsible or competent, mm-hmm. you know, at the time of the assault. So
let's get another call in here. Eve's calling from Norwood. Welcome to Radio Boston, Eve.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm actually just came out of orientation, and this was discussed today for my nursing job. But my part of this is that I think a lot about nursing staff ratios. When I have 5 patients in the ER, I don't have enough time to de-escalate a situation because I'm so busy dealing with a medical emergency. So by the time I get to de-escalate, the situation is already out of control. And the other part is you might do things differently when you don't have enough time to deal with a patient, unfortunately. I'm not saying it's the right way to do things, but you'd be quick, and rather than giving the full understanding and your full, mm-hmm. You know, taking the time to really walk someone through it, you're a little faster because you do have those 5 patients.
Yeah, so it sounds like, I mean, you just feel overworked and have too much on your plate that you can't handle the responsibilities of what it would take to truly de-escalate every situation. Eve, thank you so much for your call. We actually, on exactly this point, because the Massachusetts Nurses Association wants future legislation to include what's known as safe patient limits for nurses.
Correct.
We actually spoke with someone at the Massachusetts Hospital Association that takes quite a different view on this. Karen Nelson, she's both a registered nurse and the senior vice president of clinical affairs at the Massachusetts Hospital Association. Here's what she had to say about this issue of setting patient limits.
I believe that the issue of increasing violence, whether it's in hospitals or emergency rooms, as well as society in general, are related to societal factors, not related to issues of how many nurses are available. So I think that's a misplaced correlation.
And she also pointed out, by the way, that at the beginning of January 2009, the state ordered Massachusetts hospitals to stop diverting ambulances to other facilities when ERs are overcrowded. So basically, their argument there is that nurses being overwhelmed by too many patients isn't the problem. I mean, Linda Condon, what do you have to say to that?
It is a huge part of the problem. If you have too many patients to take care of, then you can't get in there to give the correct care that you need. That causes an increase in the agitation of the patient or the patient's family, which increases the risk for violence and for assault. We need limits on how many patients we're required to take care of so we can give good, safe care. Give them quality care. I mean, that's what we're there for. We want these patients to have excellent outcomes. So by limiting the number of patients and based on the acuity of the patients that a nurse has to care for, you can give better care. You can spot and assess these situations as they start and then quickly de-escalate them so that it doesn't become a violent situation and keep the level of anger down. You can't do that when you're overwhelmed and you're just trying to keep your patients breathing.
Karen Coffey, let me ask you, I mean, so patient limits is one thing. I also heard you mentioned before the break that there's ways to make the hospital environment itself safer.
Correct.
And I know things have come up such as increased maybe security. I've even read things that would go so far as metal detectors in hospitals, things like that. There's a whole suite of things that could be done. But hospitals, I mean, we mentioned at the beginning of the show, are places where you're supposed to feel comfortable, where you come for care and compassion, for healing. I mean, that is not the kind of environment that seems like an inviting place to go when you're most in need.
On the other hand, you'd like to think that it's a safe, secure environment, not only for the clients that they're serving, you know, the patients that are coming in, but for the people that work there. So I think it really is a responsibility of these institutions to be able to take a look at, you know, what are the risk factors, and let's develop a program, you know, that will address these factors. Whether it is, you know, it depends on like what type of neighborhood maybe your hospital or your healthcare setting is in. What type of clients are you seeing? Like, are you seeing gang involvement coming into your ED? All types of different things. Like, what is a level of egress? Like, you know, if something begins to escalate, you know, how can your employee become safe? Is there a specific, like, code type response for these types of things? I mean, and it's also training of the staff. You know, like, should everyone in the ED be trained in de-escalation techniques and in psych settings? Absolutely, but so should everyone else. It's about response times, too.
Well, you know, the Massachusetts Hospital Association also says that sort of there is no one-size-fits-all solution in terms of increasing security and safety in Massachusetts hospitals because they come in all different shapes and sizes. So do you feel like that there's any way to come up with anything that's not too prescriptive, as the Massachusetts Hospital Association says?
Right. This isn't a cookie-cutter type thing where you put one thing into place and it's for every hospital. That's why each and every hospital has to do its own physical risk assessment for its facility.
And they already have to do that.
They don't
do
that.
They do not do that.
That is the problem. They do not do that. The facilities, they don't do a physical assessment. They don't do a risk assessment. If we need to, say, all of a sudden lock that ED down because of the violence that's going on, our ED doesn't lock down.
Okay, really? Because I thought that they were required to do that as part of the state licensing process.
They don't
risk assessment on violence. They don't do it.
No. I mean, I know in the past we had at Brockton Hospital, we had a number of 911 calls that were made in a one-year period, and it wasn't until the nurses actually reached out to OSHA regarding workplace violence that the hospital then turned around and addressed the situation. And there have been improvements. It looks like the program that they have set up has started to work at Brockton Hospital.
We've got just under a minute to go, and I want to throw one last quick question to you. So you've got this the bill that makes it gives punishments for people who attack nurses in hospitals. Do you have any sense as to whether or not these other two pieces of legislation getting any traction on Beacon Hill? Could you see changes? Because they seem a tougher road to hoe.
They're a tougher road to hoe because, I mean, you're talking now with the hospitals, they're fighting budget issues because it will cost them money to do a risk assessment. But in the long run, it's going to save them money because it's going to save the issues that occur when the violence happens. It's a long road. We have no intentions of giving up. We're going to make the environment safe. We're going to make our patients safe.
Do you see nurses turning away from the profession because of the violence in the workplace?
Absolutely. Yeah. We have a number of nurses that we know that have left the profession and deal with post-traumatic stress disorder because everyone deals with trauma in a different way. And there are many out there that say they can't work under these conditions. They're afraid for their license. They're afraid for their life. And they're not willing to do it anymore.
Hmm. Well, there's obviously a lot to talk about. And it's an ongoing issue. And listeners, if you want to contribute to this, you can always do so on an ongoing basis at WBUR.org/Boston. But for now, Karen Coughlin, nurse at the Taunton State Hospital and vice president of the Massachusetts Nurses Association, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you for having us.
And Linda Condon, emergency room nurse at Morton Hospital in Taunton, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you for having us.